Right, okay. We are joined on the programme now by Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh. Jimmy, good morning to you. Thanks for taking the call.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Not too bad at all. Now, we are talking about school safety again, this time Lurgy Brack National School, and I think that's at the top of the hill heading out of Letterkenny towards Ballybuffet, and everyone would know that it's not ideal the way it's laid out currently. Jimmy, what are you looking for?
Yeah, Greg, I have to say, first of all, that from the child safety point of view, it's not too bad. It's as good as it can be. They have it well managed and for dropping off the kids and that. It's when you're exiting from there, trying to exit from there with the car onto that road again, it is so dangerous. And basically, speeding seems to be the biggest problem, Greg. I was out there on Tuesday morning just to see it when it's busy at the school morning time. And the speed of cars is unreal there. So, you know, there is an intermittent speed reduction at school times to 60 kilometres. But that seems to be ignored pretty much 100%. So I'm looking, first of all, maybe to improve that signage, to make it better, to make it more visible. I don't think it's as visible as it could be on both sides. And it's only... there's only a speed thing there on one side. So if you're overtaking somebody, for example, you wouldn't see it at all.
Yeah, or if there's a slow-moving lorry, it's obscured the whole way up.
Exactly.
And also, too, and I've highlighted it on this programme before, Jimmy, as soon as there's any growth, it's, for the most part, obscured by branches. I must have a check in it a little later on. And it's similar to another story we were talking about earlier on. We have to give motorists the best chance, don't we, to abide by the reduced speed limit.
Absolutely, Greg, and you're 100% right. That is a problem too with being overgrown by branches and so on. And that was actually just cut last week out there at Lurgy Brack to clear that problem. But another issue, Greg, is just above the school on the Ballybuffet side coming down. There's room there for a sort of proper hard shoulder. At the moment it's just a path, and in winter that path turns into muck. So if you're walking down there with kids, and I actually watched on Tuesday morning a lady coming down with two kids walking down from that direction, and the cars are whizzing by, and it's so dangerous, and they just have this rough path to work on. If that could be made into a proper hard shoulder, it would make things easier. And as well in winter time, dark winter mornings, the kids are coming in to school covered in muck because of that, it's just far from ideal. Mm. So I think if we could spend some money on that, making that a proper path, it would ease things. And the other thing that I thought, Greg, is people even living very close by to the school still have to take their car down to the school because it's too dangerous to walk that little path with children. So you know, that adds to the traffic issue then, you know. So another thing maybe, Greg, that could be looked at, and I don't know how the possibilities around this, but if there was maybe an extra bus or something like that that could bring more children there by bus, it might ease a number of cars there as well.
Yep.
But
the thing that concerns me about that, Jimmy, too, is just particularly the way that road is laid out, that if we do have a crash, it could be catastrophic. Do you know that sort of way? Because there'd be multiple cars, multiple people standing around the place. I'd just be so afraid driving past there, just because if something happens, you just get the sense that it could be really, really bad.
That's right, Greg. And you know, to go out there and stand there at a busy time in the morning really, really, really brought it home to me in a way. You know, the cars are just non-stop and there's lines of them and they're going fast and you're right. And it's so difficult to exit from there. If something did happen, you're absolutely right. It could be an absolute catastrophe, you know. So it does need looked at. Now, the council have agreed in their answer to me that they're going to apply for funding under the safety scheme for the road, and I'm hoping that something can come from that. I suppose, Greg, as you would realise, that sort of thing has to go through a process, and it takes
the
time.
The TII are involved as well, I presume, as well. It's not just the council.
Yes, but I'm hoping that something can come to make it as safe as possible, and I would like to see that hard shoulder done and certainly improvements on the lighting or on the signage and that. You know?
Yeah, because I presume if and when, which I'm sure they will, the T10 roads progress, that would take traffic away from the school for the most part, I think. But we can't wait for that to happen. That could be decades.
No, that's absolutely, Greg. That is the solution. But as you know, that's a number of years away. Mm. And you know, we have to do everything we can in the meantime to try and make it as safe as possible.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not beyond it. I mean, we saw some work that was done, say, for instance, outside Lahey. I'm not sure if you've been down that part of the world in the last while. There are things that you can do to narrow and slow traffic down that aren't incredibly expensive and aren't a permanent solution, but they certainly, you know, can make things safer. I'm not saying that's the solution here, but something along those lines might work. Who's to say?
That's right, Greg. And that's basically what I'm asking them to do, is to look at every short-term measure that we can apply to make it as safe as possible.
Thanks for your time this morning. Have a lovely day. That's Fine Gael County Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh there. 086 60 25,000. By coincidence, the Maharabeg school safety issue and the Lurgy Brack school safety issue just happened to come up at the same time, and both important. Of course, because that's where our young people are, but also important that we keep the motorists safe using roads. Hi, Greg. Just wanted to highlight this issue again with the setup in Letterkenny Hospital. Since COVID started, patients have to attend ED to get triaged, even though in my case, the ED can't do anything for me. I need to be referred to the gynae ward as I was threatening a miscarriage. It was a GP sent referral. This is my third time in 2 years, and each time I had to go into the A&E. Last week, I sat for over 2 hours in a very busy A&E, thinking I was going to bleed out and suffer a loss in a room full of people, only for my husband pushing triage nurses to get me through. I would have been sitting there hours like everyone else. I then sat for nearly another 3 hours before being seen in gynae. Greg, this needs to change. The hospital policy needs to change. Taking away masks, grand, but expecting pregnant ladies who are having issues to sit in a crowded room waiting to be triaged, absolutely ridiculous. And this this lady suffered two previous losses at 19 weeks and 9 weeks. So you can imagine the stress and anxiety and having to deal with, obviously, the emotional stress, but the physical consequences of a threatened miscarriage as to why you might end up there in the first place, needing access to toilets and what have you. My understanding was in the past, and we did raise this issue quite some time ago, in the past you would be admitted straight into gynae. I think you used to go in through the main front doors. It was straight in because it's a medical emergency, a threat to the life of the unborn child. But now people having to go through ED and being triaged, particularly given that where they're going to end up and where they need to go. I just would love to see that changed. I really would, because I was in a conversation with another person, another woman who had a very similar experience, very, very difficult for them. In about 5 minutes, 3 or 4 minutes, Caroline, but I can take it any time. A caller says that this mother had a really positive experience with the hospital yesterday. She broke her arm at 8:20 yesterday morning. She was with the doctor by 9:20, and she was x-rayed and in a cast and back home by 12:20 in the afternoon. They must be commended when they do things well. Indeed. And we, how do I put this? Nothing is anti-hospital that I try and do here. It's firstly, you know, it's in support of the people, but it's in support of the staff. And we were speaking yesterday to consultants. It's in support of them. It's that the infrastructures are improved so they can do their job better, like they want to, and also in a better environment. It's not a overall criticism, and I hope it wouldn't come from a program like this, that it's an overall criticism of the hospital, that it's just, it's not. And everyone who contacts us, bar a minute percentage, is full of praise for the staff and are generally happy when they get seen. It's getting in, it's getting seen, it's getting to bed. And as I say, it's not about trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater and you know, indiscriminate criticism of the hospital. We try and focus on areas that require improvement based off people's experience and communications we have with staff as well, because we recognise any acute hospital, it's going to be a difficult, stressful situation for the patients and for the people working there. But there must be stuff we can do, and we try and highlight it here, that can improve people's outcomes and experience and the experience of staff and what have you as well. Do you get me? So we're trying to be constructive, even though it sounds like we're highlighting negative. Any positive experiences that you have, and we read them out regularly in this program, please bring them to us as well. Because as well as that, I never want to be a part of discouraging people to attend the hospital either, okay? Let me take a quick break and we'll be back with our next guest shortly. And we're joined in studio by two guests now. We have Reverend Jim Lamont and Kathleen Doherty, both of you. Very welcome to the programme. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Greg. Okay.
Good to have you in. And we are talking about Letterkenny University Hospital's annual Little Angels Interdenominational Service of Remembrance. It's taking place in Letterkenny on Sunday, the 14th of May. Do you want to talk a little to us, Kathleen, about this?
Well, this is a remembrance service that we hold every year for families who have who've gone through the terrible loss of a pregnancy or the loss of a baby, and now we've included families who've lost their little children as well in this service. This is our first service now since 2019, and it's a beautiful service, and it's one way of, I suppose, reaching out to people as well, sort of bereavement support, family support. The staff all come together and prepare this service for the families. Mm-hmm. And we have it on the Irish Martyrs Church down in Letterkenny. And it's generally very well attended every year. And it was a huge loss to us for the last couple of years that we couldn't have it, even though we did do it here on Highland Radio. It was a huge loss because we weren't meeting the people. It was always lovely to meet families coming back, and sometimes you may have families coming back and they'd had a loss and maybe they might have a little baby with them.
Yeah.
You know, so it's wonderful in that families always feel that they're not alone in their loss.
Yeah.
When they and see other people.
And I think too, not particularly, but certainly in the area of miscarriage, for an example, it affects lots of people in different ways. And sometimes when we try and speak to someone who's suffered a miscarriage, we can say the wrong things or presume that, oh, you can go again, or, you know, at least it was early. Or, you know, people hear really probably well-intended but hurtful things. But for people who feel that loss as if it were, because it is to them, the loss of a born child, it gives them a space, doesn't it, to for their child to be recognised, for their loss to be recognised as well. I imagine that's incredibly important to a lot of people.
I think it's very, very important to people, and it's unimaginable how deep and how sorrowful that loss is. And you see that on families' faces when they do lose their pregnancy. It doesn't matter what stage this little baby is lost at. It's unimaginable the suffering that those families go through, the couples go through. And in the hospital, if families want, we visit them. We visit the parents and we have a prayer service at the bedside, and we would encourage families to allow themselves to grieve and to acknowledge this loss. And the prayer service in some ways does actually acknowledge the life that was there, even though it might have been a very short time that life was there.
Which
in the
is
womb.
So important to a lot of people, isn't it, Reverend Lamont? It is.
Well, I think the point is this miscarriage, this child is a member of the family, and I try and tell people this is your child, and they give it a name, or her, him a name, and they're members of your family and always will be members of your family. Because I remember we had a miscarriage in our marriage way back many years ago at an early stage, but we didn't. I got a shock in my life when I went in and they said, oh, your wife's had an abortion. Well, abortion was sort of a bad word at that time. And then as well as that, we didn't see anything. There was nothing for us at all. I don't know where the baby... We didn't know the sex of the baby. We didn't know what happened to the baby afterwards and of whom we went, and that was it. Whereas at least now there's a little funeral-type service.
Yeah,
within the church.
We have a lovely service in the hospital if the families want it, and we would encourage them, you know, and let them know that this big service once a year takes place. Mm-hmm. And they're very open to it. Some families might come that year, and maybe they might come for a couple of years. Some people never come back at all.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
And everyone's individual.
Everyone's,
I think,
yeah.
Reverend Lamont quite right put it out that things have changed now and that it is recognised for what it is. It's not just a... And I think the term you referenced at that time, that was the medical term for what happened. The pregnancy was aborted. And the language and what have you has changed. Reverend, this is open to everyone. And I think that's really important, isn't it? That mm-hmm. this is... all denominations and none, really.
Yes.
It's just
yes,
for people to get together. And mm-hmm. you have to strike the tone there too, which I'm told you always do.
Well, this is the way I live, and I feel that everyone is a member of the family, you know, the whole family, whoever they are, whatever they are. And the thing that I was going to say as Kathleen was talking was we missed the family being here at the service, but they missed meeting each other.
Yeah.
And that was that's an important part. Mm-hmm. When I came here, and I've been doing this for 20 years, and remember meeting a lady at the first service I was at and we were talking to her. She had lost her baby 30 years previously, and yet she was still coming to the service. Mm-hmm. So
it's sad and beautiful at the same time, really, in a way, isn't it? And Jim also, too, and we all learned, I think, through the COVID pandemic, us coming together, be it a wake or a funeral or even just calling at the house or whatever, but particularly, I think, the wake and the funeral was perhaps part of a grieving process that we didn't recognise before it was taken from us, because I spoke to people who... didn't have that experience, and they still couldn't even begin to make sense of the loss, let alone begin some sort of process of grieving. So we do need to come together at times, don't we?
Yes, I think that the wakes here in Donegal are different from other places, and somewhere further down the country there would be no wakes at all, or there wouldn't be a thing. Whereas I think it's an important part of the grieving, that the people do chance to see, come to the home, even just say, sorry for your trouble, which I don't like, but still saying that.
but we struggle in that moment, don't we,
to come just to be a present. And sometimes an arm around a shoulder with words unspoken can be just as important.
I remember in the past I would sort of say, I don't want to be waked. And then I can't remember who it was said to me. It's not really about you at that point. It's about your family, and it's about people that want to pay their respects. And it might not really matter to me at that point. Do you know what I mean? And it did change my... I'm still not fabulously in favour of the idea, but I know it's that's not what the process is. Mm-hmm. It's not about the deceased. And Kathleen, Reverend Lamont made an interesting point talking of one lady that's, or maybe it was you, I think it was the Reverend, that someone comes at multiple. But I imagine that people will attend this Mass and have in the past when it's right for them to do it. That's, because... can take a while to work through mm-hmm. losses, particularly if it's of a child.
It's just, I've never lost a child, so I don't know. I can't imagine what it's like for a family to go through something like this, for parents, you know, to go through a loss. And yes, it is. We're all so different. Some people could be there within 6 weeks. For example, we could meet somebody at the service on Sunday who sadly lost their pregnancy or lost their child maybe 2 months ago in the hospital, and they're there. And you could meet people, and it's the first time they, and maybe they had their loss 5 or 6 years ago, maybe 10 years ago.
Just when it's right for them.
All about time, and it's all about whether they're able to do it. And, you know, I've had family members who've had miscarriages and losses, and they've never been able to go. Mm. And that's okay too, you know.
When R.W. Hudson was born, the panic station started, and then he ended up in the neonatal wards. And it was, we didn't know, it was touch and go. We just simply didn't know what was going to happen. And you know, that important window of time, there was very little change, and, you know, the language was changing a bit. And then, like, in a miracle, almost miraculously then, he just began to breathe independently. Mm. And now he's such a beautiful and healthy boy. And I never would ever... take for granted that how lucky we are.
Yeah.
But my point being is that the care and genuine care of staff in that whole process and how they deal with people is really amazing, and I'll be forever grateful for what they did for us. But the point I'm getting to is that I am sure staff feel the losses, and I feel sure staff feel the pain. And I would imagine staff, if they can or spare the time, would attend these services and get comfort from that. Because, as I say, they are us. They're of the community, not robots.
They are.
No, but we're all human beings.
Yeah.
And you can't work with people and not have compassion and sympathy and empathy and concern for people. And that's what makes it special, that we are all human beings trying to do our best in situations that sometimes are very, very difficult and unbelievable, you know. And like, for example, your situation there where your child was very, very ill, and those moments of fear and worry and dread, and then everything to come right, there'll be such a sigh of relief and such gratitude. And even in loss, Greg, people will say to us, thank you so much for being so good to us, and thank you so much for everything, and the nurses here have been wonderful, and the caterer, I got lovely lunch there, it was really beautiful. Everybody's been so kind to me while I've been here, and so kind to my husband or my partner as well. And it matters when people are working together and caring for each other. You can't do it without emotion, without feelings.
Yeah, you can't, of course. And you carry at least some of it with you. And I think it's important, Reverend, that we do recognise. And we do, I think, when there are major events, quite rightly so, we are full of praise of the first responders and what have you. But I think we also have to, and I'm actually going to put the clergy in this as well, if you will forgive me for doing so, in the people that on an everyday basis, be it the fire service that turn up for fire and have to work in very difficult decisions and make very grim discoveries, our ambulance and Gardaí that might have to visit a road traffic collision, a member of the clergy who may have to go to a scene like that there, or try and make some sense of it through religion to a family member, and the nurses. They're not immune. I think we need to sort of maybe, and I think a lot of us do, is to really appreciate the work that they do all of the time, Reverend Lamont.
Yes, I think, you see, the problem can be that a service can be the same all the time. And for me, a service, a funeral service, or the service for a child, it's a personal thing, and therefore it has to be different. And I've been to certain services at times, and I wouldn't know sometimes whether the person, this is going to a funeral service, I wouldn't know if the person that was being buried was a man or a woman, because there's no reference to them. But I always, at least I try, but I do my best, that we're dealing with this family, this situation, this child, and we're focusing in on that, and therefore it has to be very personal for them and for all around. And it's difficult.
Life is difficult.
You can't make it.
And that's why we get great comfort often by coming together, and that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about a ceremony taking place on the 14th for all families who've lost their babies through miscarriage, neonatal death and stillbirth, as well as those who have suffered the loss of a child. The event is scheduled to take place at 3 p.m. on this coming Sunday, it is in fact, at the Church of the Irish Martyrs in Letterkenny, which is located where, Kathleen?
In Ballyrain here in Letterkenny.
Okay, yeah. So people will know where
people
it is. Stick it into the Google Maps or whatever it might be. And everybody is welcome. It is it's the annual Little Angels interdenominational service of remembrance for everyone, really effective, if it's the right time for people. Anything you want to add, Kathleen, before we go?
No, other than thank you for talking to us this
morning,
and thank you for allowing us to highlight this lovely service that's taking place. And it'll be just so lovely to welcome people back after 3 years, and it's a very special time for us in the hospital too, those who've been preparing this service. And a lot of new bonds have been forged down in the hospital, and new project leaders, new project managers, like for example in the paediatric ward, we have, you know, people there now who are leading out on the care of families and children who may be coming to the end of life. And in the maternity ward as well, we've got the bereavement midwife. And then in the gynae ward, we've got bereavement people there as well. So we've built new relationships and getting to know each other, and this little prayer service has done that as well. So we're hoping that it'll grow and evolve and develop mm-hmm. in new ways now in the future. But it's going to be a really, really special afternoon on Sunday, and I love it. I love that service. It's a very emotional service. It's a very, there's a lot of tears. There's a lot of hugging. There's a lot of getting together, connecting with each other again. And I suppose that's the biggest part of this service this year, is that we're all getting back together again. And it'll be really lovely to be part of it.
Yes, it's important. And I think a very important part for this service, unlike the other two we've had, which we broadcast in Highland, is the fact that they are meeting each other. It gives parents a realisation, well, I'm not the only one to start with, but they have an opportunity to meet with each other and speak with each other. And a little phrase that I sometimes use is that only a mother or a father who's lost a child can really understand what another family's going through who lose theirs.
Okay, and that Mass is at 3 p.m. This coming Sunday at the Church of the Irish Martyrs in Letterkenny, and all of you are welcome to it. Kathleen Doherty, thank you so much for your time, and for all of the staff, the work that you do down there in this area, and recognising it's difficult for everybody, of course. And last but not least, of course, Reverend Jim Lamont, thank you so much for coming in and speaking to us. Now, Derry senior football manager Rory Gallagher has this morning responded after his estranged wife, I believe that's the terminology, from whom he separated, posted a statement on Facebook detailing over 2 decades of alleged domestic abuse. Nicola Gallagher posted on Facebook on May 9th detailing harrowing incidents of alleged domestic abuse. Derry GEA have been contacted for comment regarding the allegations and asked if they'd spoken to Mr. Gallagher and if he'd be involved. In a short statement, a spokesperson for Derry GEA said, Derry GEA condemns all forms of domestic violence. We encourage anyone who's experienced domestic violence to report it to the relevant authorities immediately. Well, in a statement through his solicitors, Mr. Gallagher said, I've been made aware of a social media post by my estranged wife in which she has made a number of very serious allegations against me. Our marriage broke down over 4 years ago. Those closest to our family are well aware of the reasons for the breakdown of our marriage and the continued issues we've faced since that time. Following long-running court proceedings in family courts in both jurisdictions, I was granted a full residence order in respect of our 3 young children in February 17th of 2023. This outcome was recommended by social services. Mr. Gallagher said the allegations made against him have been investigated and dealt with by the relevant authorities before continuing. My focus over the past 4 years has been to protect our children from the ongoing turmoil in our family. I have left this matter in the hands of my legal team, and I ask that the privacy of our family is respected at this time. I'll not be making any further public comment on this matter. So that's it. And as I say, until such time as Mr. Gallagher made a formal public statement on it, people are seemingly free to say whatever they wish on social media, but the likes of newspapers, radio stations, TV stations are bound by a different set of rules. And as I say, that goes for lots of things that appear on social media. So it doesn't really answer the question as to his future with Derry GEA, or indeed if he'll lead the team out in the Ulster final at the weekend. The GEA said, Derry GEA condemns all form of domestic violence. We encourage anyone who's experienced domestic violence to report it to the relevant authorities immediately. It's a very, very difficult situation. The original statement is still out there from Nicola, and that's his response to that. Okay. Right. How would you fancy your power going out 84 times in 8 months? There have been water outages in areas of Letterkenny on 10 days in the last fortnight. Residents in an area of Letterkenny have experienced 84 water outages since September. The frustrations are being felt mostly in Bonamy, New Mills, Conwall and Tully Gay. They face constant water supply issues. It's been raised at the most recent Letterkenny Milford Municipal District meeting. And it's not the first time this has been talked about, of course. Graham Parker joins us. Hi, Graham.
Hi, Greg. How's it going?
I'm okay. I mean, how do you go beyond what's already been outlined? Water on and off 84 times in 8 months. It's an infrequent service, let's say. We can put it like that.
Yeah. It's something that's been going on, ongoing really for the past 3 years or so. But in the last 6 months, it's gotten much, much worse. We probably only have water in the last few weeks, you know, 1 or 2 days in a week. So, you know, you can't wash your clothes or dishes. You know, everything just piles up here. You can only shower, really, when there's enough hot water. And as you say, like, we have a neighbour here, and she's been marking all the days on the calendar when we've had this disruption since September, and it's been 86 days, which in fairness is probably over 90 at this stage.
Yeah, and what is the problem here? Is it power to a pumping station, or what's going on?
We don't know, because we're not getting answers. Like, myself and my neighbours, we'll log a ticket with Irish Water, but in all honesty, it's a waste of time. All we seem to get is a reference number, and with this reference number, there's nothing you can do with it. You can't follow it up in any way. Like, if you do log a ticket, I'll either do it through Twitter, or you'll do it. You'll have to ring the help desk, but the help desk puts you through to somebody in India. I have tried escalating the issue, and I actually got a call from Irish Water yesterday. Now, that's the second time I've heard from them, I'd say, in the last 3 years. But she wasn't local. She was from Cork, and I asked her, could we speak to somebody locally, etc. And she basically said no, that it would have to go through the county council.
And the bottom line is, you've experienced it 84 times. It is Irish Water are aware of a problem. Our engineers are looking to fix it. But getting answers beyond that as to what's causing it, is there a permanent solution? Irish Water is pretty faceless. And it, not just for normal residents, but also for council officials, not council officials, but elected reps as well. They are a law unto themselves in terms of trying to get some answers.
That seems to be the case. Like, I do know the county councils have a meeting with Irish Water this morning. I haven't heard how that's gone so far, but Donal Kelly has been kind of acting on our behalf, and he has, like he said, he's frustrated as we are at trying to get answers. Like, for example, another thing, I got a text from Irish Water this morning, and I'd imagine that came off that back of that phone call yesterday, but like, that text states an inspection of the fault reported will be carried out shortly to determine the potential remediation plan required. You will receive an update once the investigation is closed. So I looked back, and I got the exact same text on the 12th of April and the exact same text on the 10th of February. So I don't know. I'd imagine the investigation has never been closed.
It's beyond. I mean, so really, we don't know if this is a pump that's failing or if it's continuous breaks in the line. Do we know that much yet, Graham?
Look, we hear sometimes it could be leaks. Yeah, it could be a pump. We've also heard reservoir levels have been low, which is, I find that hard to believe considering where we live and the amount of rain we get. Whether that's connected or not, I don't know. But we hear different bits and pieces, but it's always kind of secondhand information we're getting. We never hear something.
And look, even if it is down to pressure or something along those lines, well, those are water restrictions, and they should be defined as something separate to water outages. I mean, if that's what's happening, then residents deserve to know that it's down to low reservoir levels. Though I don't buy that one, Graham, and I don't think you do either. Just try and get out and mow the grass, and you'll see how much it rains here.
Exactly.
And listen, we can talk to all the obvious examples, and why not, shouldn't we? If you've got a young child in the house and you're constantly changing their vests and what have you, and trying to wash whites in dirty water, potentially even just using the shower, as you say, the dishwasher, the damage caused to electric showers, to the dishwasher washing machine, that's the lived reality, isn't it?
Also, on top of that, we have my 7-year-old son's bad eczema. We had him at the dermatologist there in the last few weeks, and she's told us, he's prescribed creams, and she's told us that we have to shower him daily, apply those prescribed creams after the shower. But we're lucky if we can shower them a couple of times a week, in all honesty, because we haven't got the water.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, we are making inquiries to Irish Water to see if they'll give us, I mean, they're going to have to give us a definitive statement. Whether it's satisfactory or not, I don't know. You've mentioned that Councillor Kelly's been advocating on your behalf. There was a meeting today. Actually, Donal Mandy Kelly's just come out of that meeting and joins us now. He might switch the radio off for us. Donal, good morning.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to Graham there as well.
Right, you're just out of the meeting. What have they said?
Greg, I suppose they call a spade a spade. and no further forward than I have been. It's absolutely frustrating what's going on here. It's frustrating for them residents. I just got the tail end of Graham there in the Cavan, but I've been engaging with Graham and different residents there within them areas. But listen, but I suppose what they have said is that the situation that is revolving there, they're fully aware of it, which we know because the residents and myself have been logging each and every time that this is this issue arises, which is, you may say, nearly every second day at this stage. But they have stated that it's not something that's going to be resolved in the short term. But they are carrying out hydraulic module analysis at the minute, which will highlight more. Listen, they call a spade, and I'm not happy one bit of what they've stated today, is that to have this rectified, a permanent solution implemented, I suppose, it's going to take anything up to a year or two.
Right, so what is the problem? Are these bursts, or are they struggling to pump the water up as far as these townlands?
The weather pressure is the problem, Greg. In my opinion, the infrastructure that's in place is not adequate. The pipes is too small, and I've clearly stated that today to Irish weather officials. Also, you know, there is ongoing progress from our own side, I suppose, from the Water Service of Donegal County Council, where they are going to try to implement different pumping stations to try to put water on from the likes of Loch Salt direction, from the boreholes in Ballymacool as well, and that will meet the water coming down that feeds this area, which is from Ran. And they're hoping, now this is an experiment, but they're hoping if the three waters come in from the three different areas meet, that it will
increase pressure effectively. Pressure, which, yeah. So, yeah, is that the work they're saying? Is that an interim solution, or is that the work they're saying could take a year?
The work is going to take a year, Greg. Is they're going to have to replace the infrastructure here to have it right. I have also asked today that they go and inspect the reservoir in Ran, and if need be, that another reservoir be erected there, or extend the reservoir that is there, because it's my opinion that the reservoir that's there is too small and can't hold the capacity of water to keep the pressure built up.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, I'm a local representative. I'm not an engineer, but listen, I'm only reading between the lines, and, you know, sometimes, Greg, common sense goes a hell of a long way.
Well, it sounds to me like even if they combine these three water sources to try and to increase the pressure, if the pipe is not wide enough to accommodate extra pressure, we could be talking about more leaks rather than better water.
Well, Greg, that's a possibility. There's no denying that. But, Greg, we have to try something here. You know, and we can't sit back and when Irish Weather's telling me that, you know, to get a permanent solution is going to take maybe a number of years. We can't sit back that long. These people can't sit back. And that's why I'm pushing forward to have these solutions now put in place and see do the work, because I feel that they will work. And listen, I have asked that they put in pumps on the lowland areas within Bomley and Tullygay areas there as well to increase the pressure. But they have stated to me that, you know, should they do that, that they feel you're going to solve a problem in one area and create a problem in another, which is a valid enough point. But listen, going forward, this has to be rectified, and that's the bottom line. I mean, you hear the frustration of Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And I raised this at Tuesday's MD meeting as well. And, you know, I'm frustrated about this as well. I feel sorry for them residents, you know, in this day and age. I mean, 2023, and I'm like a broken record, Greg, at this stage, but that's absolutely ridiculous.
All right, stay there, Graham. Let's get some reaction from Graham there. Not too positive. Sounds like your neighbour's calendar could be busy for the next year anyway, Graham. It's not terribly encouraging. It's not the fault of Councillor Kelly there. It's just the realities that Irish Water are relating to him. Here's hoping the interim measures might have some sort of a positive impact. I suspect that infrastructure, though, might not be fit to take the extra pressure. What do you think, Graham?
Well, hopefully, look, it'll make some form of difference to us in the interim. But look, from what Donald's saying there, I think it sounds like, you know, it's going to need a lot more. It's going to need pipes replaced, or, you know, maybe a pump more locally to ourselves and might help the issue. But I don't know. At the end of the day, it seems like he's getting as many answers out of Irish Water as I am.
No, it's all right, Graeme. Listen, thanks for that. Finally, Councillor Kelly, you know, we've heard of the problem in Inishowen, and I'm sure it's not isolated there. This is, especially in a housing crisis where we need to be expanding and building more properties, I have a suspect our water infrastructure and our sewage infrastructure is going to be a serious issue in terms of it's not going to be inflation or the lack of workers. It's actually going to be our infrastructure that's going to stop us building houses that we need by the sounds of things, the way things are developing.
Yeah, Greg, that's a very valid point, and that's something that was raised there today by my colleague, Councillor Kieran Brogan, as well. Had asked for a detailed report on exactly what you've mentioned there. And listen, to be quite honest, they couldn't answer and stayed out today, but they have agreed to come back with a report on that. And Greg, just to mention as well, like, I have been pushing and pushing for a face-to-face meeting with Irish Water. We were recently at a meeting in Kilkenny, now not with Irish Water, it was a seminar, but not, that's besides the point, but we were told it was an AILG seminar where they told us that Irish Water were conducting face-to-face meetings throughout the country. And, you know, I put that, as well as my colleagues there today, put it to Irish Water. And, I mean, they've more or less blatantly turned down a face-to-face meeting, which is absolutely shocking. And tried to tell us that this is not happening throughout the country. I mean, we've been told one thing by a different body and been told another by Irish Water. But listen, I've stated clearly there, as my colleagues there today, that we are not going to sit back and let Irish Water not come and meet us face-to-face. And it's something that I am going to be pushing forward for going forward, because, you know, let the Kinney's grown, you know, and we're trying to get houses built. And, you know, at the end of the day, Irish Water is the elephant in the room here, and we need to get them around the table and have all these issues addressed once and for all. And I'm just going back, Greg, to the Balmain issue there, and Tully Gay and Cornwall and New Mills. I mean, these are ongoing issues dating back to 2006. You know, and it's absolutely shocking, 16, 17 years, and you've seen the water there yourself, Abominy, off 84 times since September. The last 2 weeks, they only had water 2 days out of 14 days. That's absolutely ridiculous, and I'm not going to sit back and let this continue, Greg. And I do welcome that measures are going to be put in place now to try to increase the pressure within them areas. And listen, I hope they work. But then the long-term solution is the infrastructure needs to be replaced, and that's something that I'm going to push for going forward. And I'll continue to push for until they do implement the proper pipes to give everyone the proper service they deserve. These people are paying their taxes, they're paying their water bills, they're doing everything right, and they deserve an adequate service like every other individual.
Okay. Listen, thank you very much indeed for your time. I appreciate it. That's Councillor Donald Kelly there. You also heard from resident Graeme Parker with the life, not the life, but with what they're experiencing there. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and texts. 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. All right, San Maher is an advocate for Lyme disease. We're speaking to her in the context of it being Lyme Disease Month. Anne, thanks for joining us.
Hiya, Greg. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on the programme. Okay, so as much as you can, describe to us what Lyme disease is.
Lyme disease is a bacterial infection that you get from a tick bite. That's if you know you've got bitten by a tick, or other flying insects too. Horse flies add to the problem as well. It's 28 years nearly since I got sick after a trip in the States. I didn't remember a bite like a lot of our patients. So, I just got sick and, it took 8 years for me to get diagnosed, and that was abroad.
Yeah. Did you go through the process of going to Dr. Lambert and tests in Germany, or was yours a different route?
I was a different route. I was pre-Dr. Lambert. Through an English group, I heard about a doctor in Switzerland, and I travelled over there to be diagnosed, and I had spec scans. I had facial paralysis, Greg, so that was an obvious sign that I had Lyme disease with all my other symptoms, but it wasn't recognised here because my blood tests were always negative. So as well as testing for Lyme disease, positive for Lyme disease, I had vasculitis in my brain. I had a SPECT scan in Basel Hospital, which showed up that, and I was at high risk of stroke. I had a co-infection as well, which added to the problem, mycoplasma. Now, the thing is, it was my GP looked after me. I didn't have specialist treatment. My GP followed advice from the doctor in Switzerland. So resulting in years of other complaints as a result of late diagnosis.
And some people never get the diagnoses. We still struggle in this country, do we not, to recognise Lyme disease for what it is. It seems to be, if people go to certain doctors or what have you, that it's anything but Lyme's disease, that it's in your head, that it's this, that it's that, and people's journey can be really, really long and frustrating, and there's not even sometimes any success at the end of that. Why is there such a resistance for the HSE to fully accept how many people are so severely affected by Lyme disease, do you think?
I have no idea, and Dr. Paul McKeown from the HPSC had, there was articles published on newspapers yesterday, but they still don't deal with the problem of getting diagnosed and the problem of successful treatment. Look, we need just frontline staff, GPs and all need to be educated about what to look out for. I had Bell's palsy, which is one of the neurological signs of Lyme disease, and I still have facial paralysis because of my late diagnosis. So if we were all educated about this, about prevention and about early treatment, and we'd really prevent a lifetime of chronic illness.
But are the health experts, generally speaking, referring people for Lyme disease diagnoses in this country, or are people still having to pay hundreds of euros to do it privately?
Mostly private, Greg, to be honest. I run a little support group on Facebook, Lyme Chat Era, and we nearly have 700 members in a couple of years. And the majority of those people have got diagnosed abroad through German tests. And the problem with the German tests are not recognised here, which is really strange.
And you know, you could multiply by many, many factors the 700 people, because there's so many people out there who think
TikTok
they have something
Ireland
else.
Have thousands of members.
Okay. Also, too, I don't understand it. Going back a number of years ago, there was a motion passed and seconded at Donegal County Council. And I believe at that point, it was sent to the Office of Public Works, the OPW, to erect signs warning people of the hotspots in Donegal where these ticks may well be. Those signs have yet to appear again. They have in other counties. I don't know what the problem here is in Donegal. It's the will of the council. It's been passed to the OPW. Where are these signs?
They haven't been in many counties. My own, I'm from Kilkenny, and our Lord Mayor David Fitzgerald passed a motion last year and the signs have been erected. Now, but we need the OPW on board because they have the bigger parks, you know. And I don't know what happened in Donegal, because I'd like to say hello to all the Donegal patients that have supported our rallies at Leinster House. And I know they've been fighting for awareness and signs up there, and it hasn't happened.
All right. Well, the HSE have issued Be Tick Aware, Protect Against Lyme Disease. This is according to the HSE and HPSE. There's advice which I'll read out, if not today, certainly at the start of the show tomorrow. They've accepted that there is a threat of Lyme disease from tick bites. If you're going to go that far, well, then let's get the signs up to warn people. Let's get a general acceptance in medicine that it exists. Yeah. Let's get a streamlined testing in this country. Let's get more awareness out to GPs, and let's get people on the life-saving and life-changing antibiotics just as soon as we possibly can. If we're that interested in public health, this is one area we should not be neglecting.
Yeah. And the MEPs adopted a resolution in the European Parliament in 2018, And there has been no follow-up with that either since, Greg. So I don't know why everything takes so long.
Well, you see, the problem I have is, and I remember I had a conversation with Dr. Lambert at a very, very early stage of COVID, and I just get a sense they don't want to deal with it. It's going to be a problem, and they're going to do the exact same with long COVID as well. It's all in your mind. It's something else. And
Dr. Lambert is treating long COVID patients as well as chronic Lyme patients. He understands. He just knows.
Yes, but he can't. He's an outlier, and he's not going to be in that position forever. So the gaps need to be filled. Right. Okay. Anne, thanks for helping us make some awareness here.
Thanks. And TikTok Ireland are having a conference in Portlaoise on the 27th for anyone that's interested in learning more about our situation.
Okay. TikTok. All right, Anne. Thanks very much indeed for that. Okay. Take care of yourself. Bye bye. Anne Maher there. Wear long trousers, long sleeve shirts and shoes. Wear a hat to tuck in your hair. Use an insect repellent. Check skin, hair, and warm skin folds. For ticks after a day out, checking for ticks and removing any from your pet's clothing, outdoor gear, removing any ticks and consulting with a GP if symptoms develop. And if you feel it could be that, don't leave until you get some sort of satisfaction. We might return to that again before the end of May. It's such an important issue. Have a lovely day. We're back with you tomorrow at 9.